理课堂听 class.com
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Scientists these days are equipping rats to locate survivors in collapsed buildings. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Advanced. Here at Studio Classroom, today's article is a science article about rats. Well, we're not talking about mice, but about, well, their cousin. And their cousin, the rat, is a lot larger. And so in this science and technology issue, we're talking about scientists equipping rats to rescue people who are in a dangerous situation, such as being buried in wreckage, in the wreckage of collapsed buildings. And here with me on the program today to talk about this, we have three hosts. First, let me introduce myself. My name is Troy Peterson, and we're glad that you're with us today. And also back with us, she's been a long time away, but you're back, I believe, at least for a short time as a guest, is Pam Osmond. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Troy. And listeners, it's wonderful to be back. This is my favorite place in Advanced Radio Studio.
Now, you and your husband just celebrated your 26th anniversary?
That's right. You may give away my age, though, Troy.
Well, we won't tell anyone.
Thank you.
But welcome back, Pam. And also with us on the program is Bill Quinn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Troy. And I want to say it's nice to have Pam here for many of our listeners and readers. Pam does a lot of the editing for our articles, so it's nice to have her on the program. Mm.
That's an important point, Bill. In fact, she's still a part of Studio Classroom Advanced because I know that she helps us. Even while you're living in the United States, you're involved via computer.
That's right. In fact, Troy, I'm at my computer every day, starting at 8 to 8:30 in the morning until 5 or 6 o'clock at night, doing definitions and practice sentences and web questions and answering student letters. That's one of the most enjoyable things that I get to do.
Okay, so we realize that Pam is very important to the program and to all of the work that she puts in to make it possible for us to enjoy these articles. Also with us on today's program is a regular Ethan White. Hi, Ethan.
Hi, Troy. Hi, listeners. It's good to be here. And I found today's article very interesting. It's not something that I would normally think about, that if I was trapped in a wrecked building, that I'd want a rat to come and find me. But if it's going to save my life, well, maybe it's worth looking into.
Yes, and that's true, because they have often used dogs in the past in order to sniff out those who are who have survived perhaps some kind of a tragedy, such as the collapse of a building in an earthquake or for some other reason. So it looks like, though, that rats may replace dogs.
That's a possibility, Troy. And in fact, when I received the article a few months back, I really had to laugh at the title, Send In the Rescue Rats. To me, it was a very funny concept, but it's a very interesting idea and one that looks like it could be successful, maybe.
It's nice to see rats get some positive public relations here, Troy. Rats typically fall along the lines of snakes and spiders as far as popularity amongst humans, so I'm happy to see the rats get a little recognition.
Mm. Well, they certainly are an intelligent creature in a certain sort of way. But what we're going to discover in the article here, this is our science article in the Advanced magazine on page 14, is that science is equipping these rats with radio transmitters, and they're also putting a transmitter inside their brain, electrodes that help to identify what the rat is thinking at that time. So we're going to look into this a little more as we begin first with today's reading.
Send in the rescue rats. Rats equipped with radios that transmit their brainwaves could soon help locate survivors buried in the wreckage of collapsed buildings. Rats have an exquisitely sensitive sense of smell and can crawl just about anywhere. This combination makes them ideal candidates for sniffing out buried survivors. Of course, the animals have to be taught to home in on people and then they must signal their position to rescuers on the surface. In a project funded by the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, the Pentagon's research arm, Linda and Ray Hermer Vasquez of the University of Florida worked out a way to achieve this.
This is your advanced program here at Studio Classroom, and here we are on page 14 looking at the science article, Send in the Rescue Rats. These are rats equipped, it says, at the top of the page, they've been equipped with radios that transmit their brain waves in order to locate survivors who are buried in the wreckage of collapsed buildings. We know this is a problem in places where there have been devastating earthquakes. I know this has certainly been true in Japan and in the United States and other places in the world where you will have buildings collapse. Well, how do they get to those survivors in time? Well, first, they need to locate them. So what is it about the rat that makes it an ideal animal?
Well, the first sentence of our article says, rats have an exquisitely sensitive sense of smell and can crawl just about anywhere. So there's two really, really good qualities about these rats. One is that they have an extremely, extremely good sense of smell. And the other is that they're small, so they can work their way through wreckage very easily.
And you had said earlier on, Troy, that in the past dogs have been used, and they are still being used because dogs also have a very strong sense of smell. Mm-hmm. But they can't get into these places that rats can get into.
Mm-hmm.
And the combination of that makes them the ideal candidates for sniffing out. And we see sniffing out there in line 10. I had underlined sniffing out. That means to use their nose to find them.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we use the phrase sniffing out if we're talking about the necessity to find a problem. Well, I'm sniffing it out. I'm looking for a problem. We're trying to find out where the problem is. In this case, of course, the rats are sniffing out where a survivor is located. And once the survivor is located by the rat, then the rescue workers can go about digging in that particular area to find the survivor, of course, hopefully before they die.
That's right, Troy, because we know after many of these devastating earthquakes have occurred, there have still been survivors. And sometimes they are found in time, but that the time then is crucial. Right after the earthquake and then the rescue team arrives, there's a limited amount of time to find people who are still alive under the wreckage.
Typically, that's a period of maybe 2 to 3 days, Troy, because without water, the human body won't survive. So it is important that they do find them quickly.
Now, there's a problem here, and that is that when you use a dog, we know that a dog is a large animal. It can't get inside the wreckage. On the other hand, when a dog does locate a survivor, well, it's in the general area so that the rescue workers can go to work in that general area. But when a rat recognizes or spots a survivor, of course, or sniffs one out, it's right in the particular area where that survivor is. The problem is you can't see the rat that's down inside the wreckage, can you, Bill? So what do you need to do?
Well, the animals have to be taught to home in on people, and then they signal their position to the rescuers on the surface. So that is an electronic transmission of their location.
Okay. So, like a dog, they too can home in on the person located inside the wreckage. On the other hand, you certainly can't see the rat down underneath the wreckage, so there has to be this second form of communication.
That's right. And if you look over on page 15, there's a really good diagram of how this system all works, and we'll be using it to refer to later as well. But you can see that there's a backpack that's triggered when they find the human, and that backpack emits this radio signal, and then they can use their technology to home in on and find where the rat is, and then they'll obviously also find the person.
So this project, it says, equipping these rats with the ability to locate survivors, is a project funded by the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That's a very long title, Pam, so what do we say?
That's right. Well, Troy, I always wonder who comes up with these kinds of ideas. So we see that there's a team from the University of Florida, but it's being paid for by the U.S. Pentagon. Now, the Pentagon refers to not only the building, but also this defense arm of the U.S. government.
Okay, and it's also called DARPA.
I've even heard it said that way and often wondered exactly what that is. Well, now we know. It's the research arm of the Pentagon located in Washington, D.C. Bill, what is the Pentagon?
Well, the Pentagon is the headquarters for the U.S. Defense Department, and of course, it's one of the largest buildings on Earth. It's a five-sided building, and that's where all the military is headquartered.
Bill, have you been in the Pentagon?
Never have been.
I have. And when I entered the Pentagon, of course, I was went through several detectors. I was also frisked. They made sure that I wasn't carrying or wearing anything. And then I received a special badge and was allowed to enter the Pentagon and was on tour with a group of other individuals as we walked around the halls. And, of course, I was looking in the offices, spying out some of the commanders and chiefs sitting at their desk while they were walking the halls. Lots of military people. In fact, I don't think you'll find anything in that building other than military individuals. It was a bit frightening for me. In a sense, I was afraid to look the wrong way or do the wrong thing.
I could say that would be intimidating.
It was. Mm-hmm.
But you can also see that this would be a project they would probably be interested in, because these rats can now be used to help rescue people in the devastation that might be caused by a bomb that would be set off.
Right.
Could help them to find personnel maybe if they were in a foreign camp.
Okay. So these rats then are wearing a transmitter that sends a signal to the surface when the rat has located a survivor. Well, how in the world is a rat capable of actually transmitting the signal? Does it push a button?
We've got these implants that are attached, actually, to its brain.
Sure.
And when we have sensations in our brain, Troy, our neurons, the cells in our brain and all throughout our body, send electronic signals. Mm. And that's what they are tapping into, the electronic signals that are stimulated when the rat locates a person.
Well, why don't we continue then with the reading? We've just jumped into the next section of the reading. So let's have Marcy then read for us the last half of the section on page 14 in your Advanced magazine.
First, the researchers identified the neural signals rats generate when they have found a scent they are looking for. When a dog is sniffing a bomb, he makes a unique movement that the handler recognizes, says John Chapin, a State University of New York neuroscientist who is collaborating with Ray and Linda on the project. Instead of the rat making a conditioned response, we pick up the response immediately from the brain. There are two types of neural events that we believe are hallmarks of the aha moment for the rat, says Linda. High-frequency activity occurs in one subset of neurons, and decreased activity is observed in two other areas, she says. Reading the rat's mind. Each rat has electrodes implanted in three areas of the brain. The olfactory cortex, where the brain processes odor signals, the motor cortex, where the brain plans its next move, and the reward center, which, when stimulated, gives the rat a pleasurable sensation. The electrodes are permanently implanted in the brain and can give accurate signals for up to 9 months.
Okay, so the big question answered for us is, how do these rats communicate with the rescuers on the surface? The rat is down underneath the wreckage. It now has found a survivor or sniffed out a survivor, and so it generates a neuron signal, a neurological signal. When we use the word neuro at all, what are we talking about?
Well, Troy, this term is key in this section of the reading, and we see in line 23, identified the neural signals. And neural means involving a nerve or the system of nerves that include the brain. Throughout this reading, we're going to see neural referred to in a couple of different forms. And this just means the electronic signals that go on throughout your brain and the signals that the brain sends to the body.
Now, those who train dogs and use dogs for sniffing out bombs or sniffing out survivors in wreckage, they've done much the same thing. Is that right?
Well, what they're doing with a dog is the dog has a tremendous sense of smell. Mm-hmm. They're able to identify certain particular smells. A dog reacts by wagging its tail mm-hmm. or maybe moving around in a certain way. They're tapping into the rats here just through the electronic signals being transmitted.
Okay.
And we talk about the handler of the dog. And the handler is the person who is in charge of managing the dog, reading the dog's signals, and telling people what the dog is trying to communicate to people.
Now, obviously, if a dog makes a unique signal, that signal obviously was sent from the neural system of the dog's brain, communicating with its nerves or its nervous system, which causes the dog to wag its tail. So science thought, well, couldn't we just get inside the animal's neurological system, find a way to connect electrodes to that system, and therefore it would be possible to identify exactly what the animal is doing at the time that it signals that it's found its goal, or it's identified, in this case, a survivor.
Well, techniques such as this, Troy, are even used in medical research today on human beings, because doctors will do research on human beings and they are identifying the brain waves and the electronic signals. And so they've taken this human medical research and applied it to rats.
Okay. So we see here then that John, it says Chapin or Chapin at the University of New York, he's a neuroscientist, and it says that he's collaborated with Ray and Linda on this project. Ray and Linda, it says, are the Hermer Vasquez of the University of Florida, and we have a quote here, and it says, instead of the rat making a conditioned response, we pick up the response immediately from the brain. What is a conditioned response?
This is one of our special terms for this article, and it's just simply something that a person or an animal does after connecting an experience to a specific action, situation, or stimulation.
I think a good example of this might be that if you touch something hot, your conditioned response is to pull back so that you don't mm-hmm. burn yourself. It's just you associate this type of reaction with the feelings that you get. Mm-hmm.
And we said because a rat is in the wreckage, of course, the rescuers on top have no way of actually seeing the rat perform some kind of unique movement that would identify the rat as having found a survivor in the wreckage. So they needed to find another way, and this is the neurological way, by connecting electrodes directly to the rat's brain.
They've actually identified, Troy, three different aha moments, that they call them, in line two of our second column. And one is a positive aha movement and frequency, and the other is a negative frequency, two other negatives.
So basically, they're simply differentiating between the high-frequency activity that occurs and, on the other hand, the decreased activity of the rat when it's just going about the normal process of climbing or moving around.
And, Troy, I thought it was interesting how the writer uses that expression here. The aha moment is just the moment of discovery. You may see this, you may read it, but oftentimes we'll see it in the movies or on TV. Someone makes a discovery and they say, aha, I found it.
And, Troy, just to help our listeners understand, a high-frequency activity electronically in the brain might be if you were to get excited about something. Mm. And then to think of the other way, decreased activity might be if you were afraid of something or fear and were wanting to withdraw. Mm. So that's how they differentiate the electronic signals.
And if you look at the actual wave pattern, a high-frequency wave is going to be – the wave is actually going to be much taller and the space between the waves will be much smaller, whereas a low-frequency, they will be further apart and they will be much shorter.
Now, for those on the surface, the rescuers, monitoring the brain activity of the rat, they need to find some way to read the different neurological impulses being sent by the rat. Therefore, they have these electrodes implanted in three different areas of the rat.
And for instance, Troy, how do they track this? They're going to have really two computer programs they're looking at. One is identifying the location of the rat, and the second one is identifying any change in pattern of the neurological response of the rats.
Mm. And so you mentioned that we're putting these electrodes into the rat's brain, we're implanting them. That means to put something in. And an electrode is something that receives or gives out an electric signal. And so this is going to be used because the brain uses electric signals. They can then use these electrodes to determine what is going to happen, what the rat is actually thinking.
All right. And, of course, electrode is one of our specialized terms. It's simply the device through which an electric current enters or leaves something. And the word implanted, Pam.
Implanted is one of our vocabulary focus words, and it just means to put something, usually a device, into the body.
Now, it's interesting, Bill, the three areas that these electrodes are connected to, the first is in the olfactory cortex. That's a specialized term. If we had more room in our specialized term column, we probably would have included that. But when we talk about the olfactory part of the body, what are we talking about?
Well, we are referring to our sense of smell, Troy, and that is the key to the rat. So that's their olfactory senses.
Okay. Now, the cortex here, of course, is referring to that area of the brain that the nose is connected to.
Right. This is the area of the brain the signals go to.
All right. So when you smell something, of course, your brain registers that scent in a certain way. It's true, then, that if these rats, like dogs, have been sent to sniff out those who are surviving, they are after sniffing out a particular smell. And when they find that smell, then the brain, I should say, the olfactory cortex located in the brain, sends this neurological response or signal.
The next place they implant is the motor cortex, and we talk about motor skills, and that's just related to movement. When we talk about motor, it can talk about how you move, and this cortex of the brain is kind of like the center that helps determine what the next move will be of this rat. So they can determine now, okay, where the rat is, this is what it's thinking, and this is actually giving us a signal that there is a human here.
Okay, so neuroscientists, when they talk about motor movement, they're talking about the ability of the body to move in certain ways that would be habitual or correct or appropriate given the right brain response.
And the third area, Troy, I personally think is probably the easiest for us to understand. It's called the reward center of the brain. And this is the part of the brain that when it's stimulated in some way, it gives the rat a pleasurable sensation. It makes him feel good.
I mean, the same sensation that I get when I have a piece of chocolate.
Same for me.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I was thinking of an example similar to that, Troy. I might be walking down the street and I smell pizza. Well, that appeals to my olfactory cortex. And then the motor cortex causes me to walk in the direction of the pizza place. And then, of course, the reward center is my feelings about and thoughts, this is going to be good.
Okay. So actually, it looks like that the rat at this point is not only sending a signal, but it's also receiving a reward here, a stimulation that's coming from the monitors, the scientists on top who are involved in the rescue. So once the rat has identified through smell and also it is moving in the direction, that's the motor response of the rat, it's moving in the direction of the smell, which would be then that of a survivor, a human being, then they send a stimulus to the rat. They stimulate this part of the brain that's called the reward center. Stimulation.
Stimulate means, Troy, to cause part of the body to function or experience increased activity. That means to activate it.
Okay. We always talk about stimulating ourselves in some way. We might even talk about some situation being stimulating, such as maybe being involved in a concert or something can be very stimulating. And a good conversation can be
stimulating. Right. We might have a stimulating conversation, something we might learn or maybe enjoy.
And, of course, the noun would be stimulant. These different things that you've referred to would be the stimulants.
You mean like coffee?
Yes.
Okay. Coffee, chocolate, pizza. I suppose for our Chinese listeners, it would be a good bit of dried fish. Cuttlefish would be a stimulant for some. Others, I think, they find their stimulants through betel nut.
Mm-hmm.
But that aside, we now have today's feature. So let's listen in.
Good evening. Tonight's leading story, rats, are they merely rodents or humble heroes? Most people have had negative experiences with rats and mice, which are generally thought of as a nuisance. However, our own Jordan Greer is on site at the University of Florida with a perspective that just might change your idea of rats.
That's right, Tom. I'm here at the U of F with Linda Homer-Vasquez, the so-called rat expert. Linda, what makes these rats different from ordinary household pests?
Well, Jordan, Unlike most rats, these rats are actually trained to change lives. It's been known that rats possess a very perceptive sense of smell, and what we have done is used this to our advantage. We have planted electrodes directly into their brains and nervous system. That tells us when they have come across familiar odors.
What kind of odors are these? Are you telling me that if you were hungry for a hamburger, these rats would be able to sniff one out for you?
Oh, well, I'm sure they would be able to, but this project focuses more along the lines of sniffing out buried survivors, drugs, even explosives.
That's fascinating. But tell me, Linda, how do they differ from breeds of dogs that do the same thing?
Well, rescue dogs are reliable and easy to train, but when you're in a situation where you have people trapped under rubble, most dogs aren't going to be able to fit through tight spaces.
Well, how do rats compare to search and rescue robots?
Machines have their place, but it's impossible for a mechanical nose to distinguish between scents like the olfactory senses of a rat. That, and the fact that rodents, although primitive among the mammals, have a certain biological intelligence that a machine just wouldn't be able to replace.
That's truly incredible. Well, it seems that, while they terrorize kitchens and scare young children, these little creatures can, and do, play a life-saving role.
Rats saving lives. Who would have thought? We'll continue to keep you updated on this groundbreaking news.
Thank you for today's feature. Tomorrow we're going to continue with a science article about the rescue rats. And we'll also learn some rat terms. Perhaps you didn't know that in the English language we have some unusual phrases that you can use, like the word rats, which is simply used to express frustration. Well, until tomorrow, this is Troy.
And Pam.
Bill.
And Ethan.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.